Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. Helping you discover the Twin Cities, it is Radio K's Real College Podcast, online and on the air. My name is Matthew Curtis, and this week we are keeping fit. When something bad happens, a cliche that is often uttered goes something along the lines of, at least we have our health, illustrating the importance of well-being above all else. In this day and age, we are making an effort to keep our spirits wholesome, eat healthy, and keep fit. Also, we hear The Word on the Street with Patrick Sharkey and Radio K's Weekly Spotlight with Zach Simon. And it all starts right now on the Real College Podcast. Everyone and everyone's cool mum knows that yoga is big. It's not just for hippies anymore, and with $90 Lululemon yoga pants and new luxury LA yoga studios, even the great Yogananda might start to feel a little self-conscious about his downward dog. Producer Amy Friedman talks to some yoga purists to answer the question, when did yoga and relaxation become so stressful?
There's hot yoga, dog yoga, yoga raves, and of course, naked yoga. But if it's free yoga that you want, you might be better off leaving these newer trends behind and going back to yoga's roots.
We did it before it was cool to do.
This is Mithali Chari, chairperson of the Trustee Executive Council at the Hindu Temple of Minnesota. She teaches a free yoga class at the temple.
Our focus is not quite commercial. It is donation-based, and right there it is because we think that yoga should be for everybody.
But it's hard to get Chari riled up about some of the studios that do charge. She gets it. There's nothing tantric about not being able to pay your rent or put food on the table.
Teachers that want to give it their all, they make the choice. And they say, you know, I can't not teach, but I do need to charge, and I can't not charge because I have to pay my bills.
And that may be something that yogis understood hundreds of years ago, too. The Sanskrit word dakshina, or guru dakshina, refers to the ancient Vedic tradition of paying one's guru or spiritual guide as a thanks for their teachings. Of course, this didn't always take the form of money, like in the Mahabharata, an ancient Sanskrit text from India, where student Eklavya offers his thumb as payment to his guru. I don't know of any studios right now that are charging a thumb for their services, but some are charging an arm and a leg. And yoga teacher Suchrit Kachyal doesn't see anything yogic about this.
For me, the question would be why do you pay for yoga? And that's not a question why yoga is free. You know, yoga is by default free.
He runs the yoga club at the University of Minnesota.
Down, you can relax.
He is not convinced that the ancient tradition of dakshina can justify commercial yoga. His class will remain free.
Because if I was charging for yoga, I wouldn't be practicing yoga. That's what I think, and at least that's how I would think about it.
Do you want to explain that more?
Because then yoga stops being a spiritual practice for me. Yoga becomes a more of a physical practice, where the physical part of it is the monetary gain or whatever that I gain out of it, you know?
For Kachyal and Chari, it's not just exercise. And this is also where they break from the mainstream. Here's Chari again.
And really, yoga is not just about the asanas. It is about a spiritual mind and body connection.
The physical act of yoga that most of us are familiar with is called asanas. And asanas are nice and everything, but for the traditional yogi like Chari or Kachyal, meditation is the main event.
For looking into yourself, for searching who you are, that's what yoga is. I mean, if anything, that's what the message of yoga I'd like to impart, that let's all just look inside and who ask the question who we are.
Charging for yoga could mean potentially excluding some from what they see as an essential human right, spiritual development. For Kachyal and Chari, their classes are not about sales, but about service that in itself is the reward.
The word service itself comes from the root verb. It's a similar word, seva.
Or selfless service. In ancient India, seva was work performed without any thought of reward or repayment. It was believed to help one's spiritual growth.
But the idea is that the seva or service is done to the self and to others, and there's no distinction between them. Would I charge myself for doing yoga? No. So why would I charge someone else for doing yoga, you know?
This doesn't mean that they think their yoga is necessarily better or more high-minded than some of the teachers who have to charge for their class. In fact, they had a lot of praise for studios and teachers in the Twin Cities. But there's a fine line between dakshina and exploiting a cool new trend.
Like, you go to this yoga studio and you have to be really trendy. You've been, you know, wear yoga clothes or pants or whatever they are. I don't even have those things.
Because if there's one thing I learned from attending their classes, it's that the most important thing about yoga is that you're not supposed to look cool while doing it.
Inhale, exhale.
At the Hindu temple, yoga teacher Punjabi Patel tells us that it's okay if we laugh at him while he does lion's pose.
One more time. Inhale, exhale.
For Culture Q, I'm Amy Friedman.
In the studio we have here Amy Friedman, producer for Culture Q, fresh off, her travels, and this is her first story back. How are you doing?
I'm so good. It's so good to be back. And, you know, cold, but good.
It's so good to have you back.
Yeah.
It is an absolute pleasure. And and for your first story, you've chosen to do yoga and the luxuriousness of it. Why did you decide to do this?
Well, I actually know the person who does the yoga classes, who does the yoga club at the U. And I've been to a variety of yoga classes in my life. My life has just been surrounded by yoga classes. And I actually, a little secret, I'm not particularly fond of yoga. But it's very much in my life. And I noticed that there is definitely a big difference between kind of the tone and the feel of the yoga classes that this guy does and some other ones that I think people more commonly think of when they think of yoga classes. So, yeah.
So you think the commercialization of it has, you know, added this kind of pressure to kind of be like, you know, with all the hip gear and things like that. Is that kind of what?
There's the hip gear and everything. But so I wanted to look at are these things like how it's becoming a lot of times more expensive and there's kind of this whole like trendy fashion behind it and everything. But if it was in any way contradictory to where yoga comes from, and it does come from a very spiritual history, you know, from Hinduism and Buddhism, and a lot of the tenets of the original ways that you'd be learning yoga are in fact very contradictory to this kind of capitalist way that we've taken it. So
you think it's clouding what yoga is really about?
Yeah, and I mean, it can be about a lot of things. Like, obviously, everything changes and develops with the world, but is there something kind of inherent in this whole tradition that you just can't take out of it, which is the spiritual aspect to it, or, you know, what they say, the, like, mind-body part of it, not just exercise?
So what would you recommend to people who, you know, are kind of interested in doing yoga, but they want to keep the natural sense about it? Like, what would you do to do that?
Well, I'd say look for a studio that seems to really care about that and not kind of, you know, the silly kind of trendier. Even if that's okay, just look for a studio where you're comfortable and where you don't feel a lot of pressure to be competitive, because I think another thing is that this, when money comes into it, like, it becomes kind of weird and competitive, you know, which I think isn't really a part of the nature of it either. And so just find where you're comfortable and something that, you know, helps you and how you need to be helped. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like spending money is almost like a subconscious way of feeling like you've accomplished something.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think whenever I'm trying to do something athletic, I'll be like, oh, yeah, I'll buy these running shoes. I'll feel great about it.
And it's, like, something about the identity, too, right? Where it's like, oh, I look like I'm doing yoga.
Exactly.
But it's silly, you know? It's very superficial. There's this silly kind of yoga ego that goes on, and It's kind of unnecessary. Makes it very stressful.
Yeah, man. Like, all you need is you and a mat, probably, because the floor's hard. And
call it
a day.
Okay, yeah. You do need... They didn't always have mats. They didn't always have yoga mats, but I'm pro yoga mat as opposed to hard floor, I gotta say.
Okay, we can keep the yoga mats. Thank you, Amy Friedman.
Yeah, thank you.
Minneapolis finally has something else to be famous for, besides its frigid temperatures. From sprawling miles of bike trails to the on-street bikeways, Minneapolis has earned its position as one of the top 5 biking cities in the country. What makes a city a top biking city? Former producer Katie Bolin explores bike culture through the eyes of bikers of Minneapolis.
For one thing, but then there's like built-in exercise, and it makes my head feel way better too than like sitting just being pissed off in a car all the time.
My friend Kate Seamer, who is now 27, has been riding a bike for transportation since she was 19.
I just moved to Minneapolis, and I had this really cruddy little car that I would drive around, and someone had slashed my tire, and the alternator was bad, so I'd have to get a jump start. Well, my car doesn't really even work, so I just kind of started walking places and taking the bus. And then my mom called me one day and she was like, "How's your car doing?" And I was like, "Oh, it's great, driving it every day." And she was like, "Oh, because I have a letter from the Minneapolis impound lot that it's actually been there for over a month." And I was like, "Well, I'm an idiot." And she was like, "Yep, and the fees are worth more than the car, so you just don't have a car anymore." And then I just started biking after that.
So you didn't want to drive anymore?
Mm-mm. Once I started biking, I was like, "Oh, this is way better." Because in Minneapolis, it's so easy to get from place to place. Like, you can be anywhere in like half an hour. It's not that much longer than if you just drove a car.
According to the city of Minneapolis, there are 92 miles of on-street bikeways and 85 miles of off-street paths.
They have really tried to make biking safer.
Peter May is almost 69 years old and is still cycling around the Twin Cities.
I ride with the Twin Cities Bicycling Club. I love to ride bicycles.
He's been riding in Minneapolis since the late 1960s, when he was a student at the University of Minnesota.
It was my means of transportation when I was in school. And I do remember wrecking a front wheel when I was admiring a young lady walking by on the sidewalk when I should have been paying attention to the road and hit a pothole.
Peter has watched Minneapolis transform from a city made for cars to a bike-friendly paradise.
They've got so many rails to trails, which are great because you get fewer street crossings with them, which is, you know, one of the biggest areas of danger for bicyclists. But they've also started putting in their safe streets and their bike boulevards, which make it easier for bicyclists to get around. They're looking at it to try and get from place A to B safely, rather than just, well, we'll just make this road a safe road, even if it doesn't go anywhere near where anybody wants to go.
Kate Zimmer.
It's set up well to ride. Even if there isn't a bike lane or something, it's not like in these other huge sprawling cities where just a regular street is like 4 lanes. But here it's just small and it seems easy.
But what about when it gets cold outside? Winter in Minneapolis, or anywhere in Minnesota for that matter, is not famous for being kind and gentle to its inhabitants. Sub-zero temperatures and nearly constant snowfall would seem like an absolute death trap for bikers.
It's just slow. Like, it's not that, like, everyone's like, "Oh, it must be so cold." And it's not really cold, because after the first 10 minutes, you're, like, hot and sweaty, just like you would be in the summertime. Like, in the summer, I can just put my shoes on and I'm out the door. But in the winter, it's like, okay, do I have this? Do I have another layer with me in case it's colder? Do I have too many layers on? It's just like way more preparation.
Even though winter may not be as daunting for bikers as it looks, there are still everyday physical dangers that come with riding a bike. A recent study, published by the American Journal of Public Health, found that cities with bike share programs, like Minneapolis, had a 14% increase in bike-related head injuries than those cities without bike programs. Although the study has been widely criticized for its lack of identifying the cause and effect of bike-related head injuries, It still raises important concerns about bike share programs and bike safety awareness.
Have you ever had a serious injury?
I cracked my head open once on my way to buy a helmet because I was being an idiot. So that one was my fault. I'll take responsibility for that. I did get hit one time that wasn't my fault, but managed to come out of it pretty okay. Just some banged up and broken bike.
And Peter is currently injured from a bike-related incident.
My right arm went out, went over the railing, and came down full force on my shoulder. Consequently, that caused a fracture of the scapula, and so I'm hung up here for, you know, 4, 6, 8 weeks, I don't know.
Bike-related injuries seem inevitable, sort of like a modern-day battle wound for the urban eco-friendly commuter. But the risk of road rash or a broken limb won't stop bikers like Kate from paying attention to the bigger picture.
Do you feel like you're making a difference?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think sometimes it might seem a little bit daunting to think like, oh, yep, I am making a difference because I am riding my bike. But yeah, I think that it does. I think everybody who, every time someone doesn't drive a car, it does make a difference in some way or another.
Any complaints?
No. I don't know. I'm sure that there's, like, a bunch of things that you could be like, oh, boy, I wish that they would do this and this, but really, like, I just like to bike, and the fact that I can do that here makes me super happy, so I don't want to complain too much about stuff.
For Culture Q, I'm Katie Bolin.
Hey, everybody, Patrick Sharkey here with this week's Word on the Street. Word on the street is that Bleachers is coming to town. You may know Bleachers frontman Jack Antonoff from his previous band Steel Train, who were on Drive Thru Records back when Drive Thru Records was a thing. He's also the guitarist in the band Fun, and he's even dating Lena Dunham, creator of hit HBO show Girls. Bleachers will be playing at the Caboose on Tuesday, August 4th. This is an all-ages show, and they'll be playing with Charlie XCX. Tickets are $36 and available at caboose.com. But the fun doesn't stop there, because Word on the Street is at Kelly Clarkson. That's right, the Kelly Clarkson is coming to the XL Energy Center Tuesday, August 4th. She was once a winner of American Idol. You know her, Kelly Clarkson. She's had so many hits that have topped the charts. What is stopping you? Tickets are still available and can be found at Ticketmaster.com, and you'll get to hear great hits like this one.
You're dedicated, you took the time, wasn't long to called you mine, yeah, yeah, since you've been gone, and all you'd ever hear me say is how I picture me with you, that's all you'd ever hear me say, but since you've been gone, I can't breathe for the first time, I'm so moving on, yeah.
Word on the street is that Mint Condition is coming back to their home state. That's right, Mint Condition, the hugely successful R&B group that formed right here at Central High School in St. Paul, is putting on a show at First Ave in the Main Room on August 6th. That's a Thursday. The video for this song was produced by my friend Chris Hinding. It was shot just over in Edina. It should be a great show. Tickets are only $20. What a steal! Go support this historical R&B group from our fair state.
At least in the beginning, who would have thought there'd ever be an ending? We had it all, but it's like we've run into a wall. Now we kinda talk, but just end up fighting. Try making up, but there's just no denying. Just ain't the same no more.
What are we putting ourselves through all this for? You talk and hear me, but you can't communicate, cause you're not listening. No, these are two different things. Now I see what it means to have been blinded by the one you love so deep. Because the very things that made me love.
Lastly, word on the street is that the Pizza Luce Block Party with, you guessed it, Harmar Superstar is on August 8th. That's this Friday. The Block Party will be at the downtown Luce location. It'll feature bands like Frankie Teardrop, Pink Mink, and The Blind Shake. Jim, the guitarist from The Blind Shake, works at the coffee shop down the street from my house. We talk about the Timberwolves. He's a great guy, so make sure you support them. The Block Party goes from noon to 10 p.m., and it's free. They'll have pizza by the slice. Summit Brewing Company will be pouring some delicious adult bevs. And like I said, Harmar. This has been your weekly edition of Word on the Street. You can find out more information about all of these shows and much, much more over at RadioK.org. I've been Patrick Sharkey, and as always, thanks for listening. I don't think I've got the will to take another shot, but your words, they pierce me. All my friends tell me to accept the end, but my won't let me. Hello, you listen to the Real College Podcast on Radio K. My name is Matt Curtis, and I'm talking with Zach Simon, the copywriter for Radio K, about the weekly release Spotlight, the album that we highlight every week, in a cooperation with the Electric Fetus. How are you doing, Zach?
I'm doing great, Matt. I'm glad you asked. I'm real excited to talk about this week's weekly release Spotlight, because it is it's so cute, so sweet. It is Jack and Eliza's Gentle Warnings. The New York City duo have released a really, really nice debut LP off of Yibo Music, and it's so cute. So cute.
I mean, the name itself has really got me pumped for it. Can you tell me a little bit more about it?
Yeah, no, Gentle Warnings. So the origins of the band and their work together, they started like in a band in the eighth grade, and the band kind of like fizzled out, but both Jack Steffens and Eliza Callahan just kind of kept working together, and by their senior year of high school, they were making music under the name Jack plus Eliza, or pronounced Jack and Eliza, and they released an EP in 2014 called No Wonders, and then have just released their full-length LP in about a week. Actually, it's coming out, so that should be pretty cool. It's not even available on Spotify yet, but...
Oh, my. All right. Quite the cutting edge.
Exactly, and... Yeah, no, it's just a very nice, gentle, kind of 60s pop music reminiscent album. It's really, really great. The track that I really like from it's called Oh No, and it's just a very, like, seamless, kind of hesitant love song about, like, do I like you? Oh, I don't know. Like, do I want to, like, do things for you? I don't know. And then it kind of just ends like, oh, do what you want. It's really kind of nice. It's like very, very grounded in reality, like not too, super sugary. And that's kind of what I like most about it. It's very much a love album, but it's not like over the top, gushy, mushy stuff you kind of get bored with after a couple minutes. So.
Well, great. I mean, what's the instrumentation right now? Like, what's Jack playing? What's Eliza playing? What's the situation?
Well, I believe both of them are basically trained. Eliza, like, played guitar. She played drums in the band when they were in eighth grade, but I believe both of them just play guitar, and Eliza and Jack both also sing. They harmonize really, really well. They have beautiful voices, and they kind of, I feel like they have a lot of chemistry having worked since the eighth grade. They're actually now college sophomores in New York City, but... yeah, so they both play these really, really Beach Boy-esque, like almost like girl pool guitars. They actually often even sound like girl pool, I think, especially on the song Hold the Line. It's a really good one. And kind of like reminiscent of Tennis or like Chastity Belt, just going back and forth and having these really lovely melodies. And yeah.
Well, nice, man. Do you think you can recommend one to play right now to kind of get a feel for the album?
Yeah, yeah. Like I said before, Oh No is like a really, really good track. It very much kind of encapsulates the whole love story of the album, and it really just kind of, it's very catchy, very simple, very straightforward. It's actually one of the shorter tracks on the very short album. It's only like 34 minutes, and the song itself is like 2 minutes and 45 seconds. So, but very short, very straightforward, and very, just very succinct.
Nice. Well, here it is right now. It's called Oh No by Jack plus Eliza, or Jack and Eliza, from their debut album, Gentle Warnings. And it's right here on Radio K's Real College Podcast. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you.
I can make that.